All round the fields of Anfield Road, where once we watched the king, Kenny play.
Another week of Euros and Copa America in the books. We are now set in both tournaments for the quarterfinals. So we have the final eight, Nick, in both of those. Couple surprises. The red, white, and blue. Well, one red, white, and blue. The one that you and I are most familiar with. Red, white, and blue could say France. It could say England. It could say a lot of things. But in this case, it's the United States, and they have yet again somehow attained a FIFA ranking that they don't deserve, and they have proven that they are once again overhyped. Craig Burley said it best yesterday, the most talented United States men's national team, my ass.
Yeah.
Well, he said my arse. But anyways, I digress. So we have a lot to talk about. But Nick, first, I must ask you, how has your week been, and what has gone to plan for you this week? What are surprises that you've seen? I mean, I think that we both thought, like, for instance, Austria would beat Turkey yesterday, and they didn't. I thought, you know, Ralph definitely tactically would have been superior. But what have you been most surprised about these quarterfinals, real quick, before we dive deep into things?
Yeah, the week was good, man. We saw Greg Berhalter do what Greg Berhalter does best. That red card during the Panama match really changed everything. They had to beat a Uruguay side that really are one of the favorites to win the whole tournament.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to happen. I didn't think so. It's funny. A lot of books had the United States a favorite, but on all the apps I have where you can pick your team and they show you the percentages, like 80% of the world picked Uruguay. So nobody was really falling for it. I wasn't. You weren't. I didn't think they were going to beat Uruguay. It was 0-0 to the end, and a controversial goal was scored where it looked like he was offsides, but they counted it, and it was over, man. Turkey not – Austria not advancing was massive. Turkey played a really great game. It didn't even matter. They didn't even need the Inter midfield maestro, Turkoglu, to win, man. Yeah. They literally just plugged in all their midfield guys. The name on the back of the jersey didn't matter. They all played the position well. They all did their job, and Austria could not beat them. Turkey scored on two set pieces. They didn't need any kind of in-play action from the offense. It was a masterclass. It was pouring down rain. I think they were at Hamburg.
Did you see Sabitzer's cornrows?
Yes. Yes, I did see Sabitzer's cornrows. Yes, he was bringing out his Justin Timberlake.
Allen Iverson. Yes.
Or David Beckham when
I saw Twitter go crazy over this, where about they weren't even caring about the match. They were talking about the guy's hair.
Yeah, they were talking about his hair all match. Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny. Sir Alex Ferguson made David Beckham take his cornrows out of his hair because he said it was that ridiculous.
I forgot David Beckham had cornrows.
Yeah. And he said,
especially since we're in his mom's basement. We should know that.
Yeah, for real. David Beckham went to France. He said he had a few glasses of rosé, and he had a guy do his hair into cornrows. He took it to England, and as soon as he made it to the practice field, Sir Alex Ferguson said, "Sir, take those out your head or you're not playing." And David took them right out
of his head. It's amazing what a few glasses of rosé will make you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, man, Austria's out. Dark horses are gone. A lot of people's brackets are screwed up. Turkey will probably be out this next round. If they can advance again, it'll be crazy. I mean, maybe they could pull a Russia 2018. Who knows? But, yeah, USA out is big. Mexico out's another big one. And, yeah, man.
Well, we're going to talk about all that. The big matchup, obviously, in the next round is Uruguay, Brazil. Something's got to give, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, but we talked about rosé, and that is wine, and that leads us into a segue. We have with us today a guest, a friend of the show, listener of the show, and now going to be a regular contributor to the show. We're going to have him on from time to time, but he's our very good friend, Stephen, from Liverpool OG, grew up there around the fields of Anfield Road. And we welcome you for the first time, Stephen, to the program. Stephen, if you will, please, sir, introduce yourself.
Yes, gentlemen, thank you very much for having me. I've been dialing into your cast for a few months now. Mm-hmm. And but I'm lucky I get the privilege to speak to you on the other side of the bar as well. So, yeah,
that's right.
I'm always interested. If I'm looking for information about the game, you're my best resources, gentlemen. I love your passion and I love your insight. So, yeah, it's true. Can't help where I come from. Yep. I can only help the man I become. And the postal code was L64AY right down there in Anfield,
yes.
Right? And if anybody's listening in from Liverpool, thank you very much for tuning into these expatriates back here in the Charleston area. Yeah, it was just off Lower Breck Road I lived, you know. I grew up there. So, yeah, lifelong Liverpool fan.
So, growing up there, what was obviously when decades passed, like the 80s, Everton were a much stronger side. How was the rivalry now has lost a little bit of its luster because 23 straight matches they lost it or did not win at Anfield. Ancelotti broke that streak when Liverpool had no back line. So a little bit of a asterisk there. Klopp was by no means at full strength, but they did not win there from 1999 until I think 2021. It was very embarrassing. But when you were a kid growing up, then Everton were Premier League, you know, they were winning Premier League. They were a good side. They were in Europe. And so what was that rivalry like when they both clubs were at their top, when you had your Kenny Dalglish is there and that type of player?
Well, you know, if you look at that, the vicinity of the two clubs, and if you look at the surrounding areas, you know, there's a high concentration of Evertonians. There's a lot of Toffees in that neighborhood.
Right.
And there was a lot of divided houses because, you know, there could be some girl I might have been chasing as a kid, as a Liverpool fan, and her father might have been an Evertonian. So, you know, it might have been frowned upon, but, you know, on match days, you would see a lot of people going to the game, you know, one with a Liverpool scarf on, with the Everton scarf on. I mean, it's just the fact and the reality. But, you know, on game day, match day, yeah, there was a bit of rivalry. Everybody would be forking against the other team. I mean, in the pubs, the Evertonians would have their own pub. The Liverpool guys have their own Liverpool pub, you know, and that's just the way it was. But, you know, myself personally growing up as a boy, a lot of my close friends and a lot of the parents were Evertonians. So I actually got to go to Goodison Park more as a child than I did go to Anfield. So, you know, I always was fond and always was wanted to see Everton do well as a child. But there was a couple of things that turned me against them.
Such as?
I remember going to Everton one day to a derby, and I saw Liverpool beat Everton at Goodison Park.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way out, there was the Evertonians above the tunnel, right? And they were spitting on the Liverpool fans as they were exiting.
It's terrible.
And I thought, and I was only like about 13 at the time, you know, I wasn't naive, but I thought, you know what?
What is this trash? Yeah.
I think I'm going to deflect to Liverpool. So since then, you know.
Right.
You know, but I did watch Liverpool beat Borussia Mönchengladbach live on TV in 77.
Yeah.
I mean, I was there. I mean, I was thrilled for them. You know,
and that
was
a Gladbach side that was winning German championships left and right. That was people think Bayern Munich when they hear Bundesliga, but in the 70s, Gladbach ruled. I mean, they were a powerhouse. They were a European powerhouse.
Yeah.
So,
you know, just growing up, I decided that I preferred the style of Liverpool because back in those days, if you can think about it for a moment, there was less money involved.
Yeah.
So people were playing for the badge.
For the badge,
people were playing for the coach.
Yeah.
So I just loved the way that Liverpool were just so graceful going forward in their offence. And they had the classic defenders. You know, and it was a 4-4-2. I mean, I know we're talking briefly about England and the England side, and you're going to come up to that. But I remember in the 1970s and 80s when the England sheet was on TV, it was like seven of the players were from Liverpool.
Yes.
You know, how times have changed, how the game has progressed.
Now you have, if you count Trent in the starting 11, if he gets there, that's one. I mean, you know, but then to say that, so many of our other starting 11 are in other national teams. So Nunez, Diaz, Salah. So it's not that there's only one Liverpudlian that's playing in a national team. It's that the team is much more diverse. It's not all English players anymore. Yeah. Yeah. Hendo's obviously too old now. He's not, but he would have been there. At one time, Milner was. So, it's, yes, times have changed.
And historically, you have to look at the team sheet. There was always a great contingency of Manchester United players in the side as well.
Later, in the
national side. Yeah.
So, but in terms of rivalries, do you consider now in 2024, is Everton even on your radar at this point? I mean, it's almost like, I feel like the way that the rivalry is presented in the United States is that it's a foregone conclusion that it's either going to be a draw or a Liverpool win.
Okay. It's a good question. Personally, I've always wanted to see Everton do okay, but over the last 4 or 5 years, I've been vehemently anti-Everton because their stance and their football, the way that they play Liverpool, you know, they play an anti-football kind of style,
yes.
You know, and it doesn't ingratiate a neutral nor an old Liverpool supporter like me. Yeah. I think that so, you know, especially when I saw Pickford. You know, jump on top of Van Dijk and break his leg and his ACL.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought, you know.
That changed the whole, that changed the lot for Liverpool. Yeah. I forgot about that.
A big moment in this.
Massive.
In this decade. Because
that changed everything.
That changed the trajectory of the back four.
Yeah.
Because it was then you had Gomez, Matip, all of them went down. But VVD, I feel like if he had stayed healthy, we could have sustained it because he is the glue that holds it together. But Pickford, the severity of the injury, you took out the best center back in the world at that time.
Yeah.
And there was no question he was.
He got death threats and he was, I remember that. Now,
yeah.
That was
really now Pickford bad. Says, look, it's a bang, bang play.
Yeah.
No harm intended. But I mean, and it happened in a derby that meant way more to them than it did to Liverpool.
Yeah.
So last season, I mean, I know
did you root for them to go down?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, because we were talking about that yesterday, and he said, you know, Nick's been talking about.
Didn't you want them to stay up?
No. So the 2 years ago when I was at the bar talking to Steven, and I said if they lose to United, they're down, and they beat United.
Yeah,
they somehow it was like 1-0. Typical bullshit Everton win.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they were in like 18th and they jumped from 18 to 17. They stayed up because of that. And then they kind of caught a little bit of a break, but the other teams around them lost. But I said, if they lose to United, which I think that was Ole still there, maybe?
No, he was.
Okay, so he's ripe for the picking, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to say because they're a traditional English side. They've been
They're up forever.
But they're a rival. So it's like if you go down, I mean, I'd rather see United go down.
Yeah.
Much rather. And that Relegate United shirt is on the way, by the way. So you have to wear that proudly.
Yeah.
Do you consider now at this point, though, that United is just the bigger rival? I mean, by far. It's the most televised English match, period.
Yeah, I mean, that rivalry that we talk about, I mean, Ferguson quoted it, didn't he? He said, it's the biggest game in the Premier League. It's the biggest game that they ever play is against Liverpool. It's the biggest rivalry. But what sometimes we don't understand or what Americans who are learning, and I mean, I have to say, I'm very proud of the American public because they're getting really interested into the EPL right now.
They are.
And they're becoming more informed. And because they don't have any geographical base for
there's
them
no
to
loyalty for it, right?
No, so they're just picking a side that
they're picking
like,
a side,
you know. And just for the people who are listening in Liverpool, if you do go to a Liverpool pre-season tournament game or an exhibition match that which they often play in the States, being connected to the Fenway Sports Group,
that's right.
Yeah,
everybody is impressed about how big a fan base that Liverpool FC has in the States.
Yes. Yeah.
So stateside, those stadiums are packed. If there's a City game, there's nobody there.
Right.
If there's a United game, there's not many people there. I think Arsenal are well represented.
In the US they are.
The US,
They're
also owned by.
But they have a very American owner, Stan Kroenke, who owns the Colorado Avalanche and the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah.
So it's again, and he also owns the Rams. I believe.
Same, the Rams.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and Denver Nuggets, yeah. Yeah, he owns the Avalanche, too.
He does, and because when the Nuggets won, Arsenal fans were celebrating.
That's right, yeah. So American ownership, Chelsea already had a lot of fans and supporters in America, but because they have Todd Boehly now, who's an American that owns them, that will continue to spread.
Yeah.
It's Pulisic playing for them helped,
yeah.
But now that they have American ownership, the pipelines get bigger because yeah. You don't have a Russian oligarch who's saying they're going to say, hey, take all this merchandise and dump it in the United States,
yeah.
And they'll sell it. They'll sell it. And if Chelsea has good results, winning breeds money and success. So success breeds new fans. And it's why we've talked a ton on this program about the fact that City are as plastic as it gets in the United States. People talk about them being plastic in England. They're kids I see shopping for sneakers or for whatever the hell they're shopping for, wearing City kits.
Yeah.
And they're all new. They're within the last 5 years. So they just picked a club and said, this guy, this Spanish guy that supposedly, I don't even know his name, Guardiola.
Yeah.
So they don't know, though. They're like, yeah, and I heard about this De Bruyne kid. Yeah, he's pretty good. I'm going to get his kit.
Yeah.
His jersey. And they wear it. And they don't even know. They have no idea about the history. They have no idea that 20 years ago they were in the second tier and they've been in the third tier. Yeah. It's a flavor of the month. Like you said, there's no geographical
ties.
So they say, okay, four years ago when Harry Kane, when Spurs were second place with Poch, my next door neighbor is a Spurs supporter. I mean, yeah. You know, it's like they. Yeah. It's whoever, it's a flavor of the month. Liverpool are benefiting off that as well from winning the Premier League, from winning the Champions League. And I believe they're going to have to continue to finish top four to sustain that. The Fenway Sports Group is trying to maintain a Champions League every year appearance because they want to keep that international reach.
Yeah.
Whereas for clubs like Aston Villa, who are just now getting there after 4 decades, it's a slow grind. You'll see some West Ham people here and there. You'll see this, but like Arsenal, City, United, Liverpool, Chelsea, and to an extent Spurs. Those are your big six. The guy that comes into accent that's Everton guy, he's a rare breed. There's very few Evertonians. I mean, maybe there's a contingency in New York City or Boston and big cities, but in Charleston, you find me 10 Evertonians and I'll buy you a beer.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
So just to recap on the rivalry point, Nick, there's a lot of things that people don't always understand. Yes, we have this modern day footballing rivalry, but you've got to understand geographically where the two cities are,
yeah.
Right? You have to go back a couple of hundred years. We also had an economic rivalry, which people sometimes overlook. You know, historically, outside of London, Liverpool as a major port city, as an artery into the north of England, everything would come through the River Mersey because we're a storied a maritime city, yeah. Right? So what happened was everything would be taxed as it went on to the Mancunians, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the spark, the epicenter of the Industrial Revolution, it was all in Birmingham and Manchester.
Yeah.
Those were some clever bastards. They were building steamships. Mm-hmm. They were building railroads. I mean, clever men in the north of England, in the Manchester region. So they detested or disliked, as you can imagine, the taxation from the port of Liverpool. So what did they do? They undertook the largest civil engineering project of its time and built the Manchester Ship Canal, which goes straight out into the ocean, right? Yeah. And it bypassed the taxes,
yeah.
Right? Mm. And so then the boats would come in straight through Manchester and give the Liverpudlians, the Scousers, the finger, right? Yeah. So, you know.
So it's deeper than just the gang.
It's an economic, political rivalry over the course of the century. So, it's a great passion.
So on the one side, Everton and Liverpool are on the same side of the economic rivalry because they're both Liverpool clubs. On the sporting side of it, they're not. But then you take into account the economic and historical rivalry in addition to the sporting rivalry because the two most successful clubs in English history happen to be Liverpool and Manchester United. And that adds a whole other layer to it.
Yeah.
And it was also the statement you said, I thought you were going to go here with the Ferguson quote, but He did say all the stuff you said about the biggest rival, but he also said, it's my job and I'm going to knock Liverpool off their perch. And he did. Yeah. He won.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there, talk about that in terms of after Dalglish won that English championship in 1990, it just went all to United for 2 decades until Ferguson retired, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know.
Yeah.
Except for the Champions League, obviously, in 05, but that's not domestic. I mean, Liverpool won a few cups, but we never got the Premier League until Klopp came. So, I mean, it has to be odd when you're like, you're on the one side of that rivalry watching dominance, yeah, and then it flips.
Yeah.
And it's not, it stays that way for 2 decades.
Yeah. So would it be fair to say that since Ferguson, Manchester United have really underachieved?
Oh, God, yeah.
So I'm happy about that too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And when I see them lose and when I finish, when I see them in 10th, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, I'm happy to see it. Let me speak as an expatriate for a moment, right?
Yes.
So being a Scouser in the States, right, I meet a lot of other Englishmen who are, majority are from London, so they're big Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs fans, okay? And these guys are doing great, successful businessmen, but they don't bring their dogma and their rivalry with them, right? We all end up in the pub watching the games together because we're all like, you know, we're all Englishmen in America, so there is a camaraderie that, yes, we do like to stick together. Yes. But there is a gentleman in this neighborhood who's got a business who's originally from,
I know he's talking about.
He's from Manchester, yeah, right? And if I walk into his business, he walks out because he's a Man United supporter. Right?
Even in America.
I'll tell you afterwards
who
he's talking about.
So he's a diehard Manchester United supporter, lives in our neighborhood, has a business in our neighborhood.
He's done the same thing to me. I told his wife, Stephen and his wife, about it when I went in with a Liverpool jacket.
So so I don't care. I mean, I could support his business a lot more than I do, but I don't because, you know, he brings his dogma in. He doesn't like me simply on the color of my shirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right?
Which is just insane.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, I did.
Because in the long run, you're both Englishman, right, so you could leave that behind.
So anyway, he was on the roof of his building a few weeks last year, yeah, right? And
did he throw something at you?
No. I threw some corrosive. So he was on the roof of his building, and I was just walking, and he saw me, and he looked down, and I shouted up, and I shouted his name, but I'm like paraphrasing. I'm like, "Hey, mate, don't jump. It's just a fucking game."
Yeah.
And he gave me the finger, but it was very, very satisfying.
Well, it's true too, because they've been absolute shit for a little bit of time, man. You guys have had the upper hand the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years.
Were they jammy to win the FA Cup last year? Were they lucky to win that?
Absolutely. I mean, Christ, yes. If you'd have put $100 on that, you could have won $800. I mean, they were huge underdogs.
To their credit, you and I have given them their dues.
We did.
They knew that they were tactically as well as talent. Far over their heads.
Yes.
You have a game plan. You sit in the low block. You hope for counters. They got it.
Yeah.
Was it Maynou, I think, scored one? Yeah. And was it Garnacho? Was it?
Yes.
Yeah. So you get the 2-0, and even United can park a bus.
Yeah.
They get the 2-1 back. United concedes, but with 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, there's no time.
You know, it took City to 85 minutes to get one. Game plan executed to perfection. And Ten Hag, as Nick has pointed out, I mean, Ten Hag needed that win to even have a chance at securing his job to come back the next season. There were Manchester United pundits that were saying he sacked as soon as the match was over.
Yeah.
And there was nothing official. It was just like, okay, well, they've said this. They've basically telegraphed this for weeks.
Yeah.
It's just now we can officially announce it. But the club never announced it. And then the next thing you know, the club announces he's coming back.
Yeah, he's still here.
There's a part of me that all of me hates United. Like, I don't make it this pro. I'll give them their due when they play well. I'll say they play well, but they haven't played well in a decade, so I don't have to really say too much good about them. But Ten Hag has always been a sympathetic figure for me because even I can tell as a Manchester United hater that they weren't giving him a fair shake. If you want a manager to implement a tactical philosophy, you have to give him more than two summers to do so, especially when you have players that were still there from Louis Van Gaal, Mourinho, the gym teacher, all of these managers with different styles, different philosophies. And it's just a mishmash of players that you said, okay, we spent a lot of money on them, but how do they fit here? Well, Ten Hag says, well, I'm playing this style that I created in Holland that I played at Ajax. So I need, you know, I want this. So he goes and gets Rasmus last year. And then Rasmus Holland is what, 21, 22?
Yeah.
You can't expect a kid like that to come in and immediately be a wall beater. It's going to take a minute. So I don't disagree with them keeping him, retaining him. Now, as a Liverpool supporter, I'm like, well, he typically gets his ass beat.
Yeah, so it's good.
So it's good. But on the human side of it, at the end of the day, I do have a big heart. And I'm like, okay, all bias aside, this man deserved another chance. And he beat a foe that he had no business beating in that match. So, yes, to your question, they were very lucky to win it. But they had a game plan and said, look, this is our only chance. And if we're going to win, our only chance has to be executed to perfection. They did that. For 90 minutes, they beat City, and they frustrated him. And so that was, he deserved a second chance.
Yeah, we talk about players playing for the manager, right?
Yeah.
And if I've witnessed Manchester United, and the few times that I did last year, I felt that on paper, they should have been much better than they were actually performing. Yeah. So is it because he's lost the dressing room? Is he not getting the most out of the players? Or is it just that tactically they're always getting it wrong? I just fear that United, they don't really have a proper game plan.
They don't.
Yeah,
that's it.
And I know you put that squarely at the door of Ten Hag.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to. So, yeah. Yes. You have to, because there's no fluidity. I mean, it's all when they scored, the way they scored against Liverpool was Kwanzaa made a completely, utterly buffoon error that someone who's a rookie, it's his first season in the senior squad, and Bruno Fernandes scored from what, 50 meters out?
Yeah.
But that's you take that out. I mean, that's not a child. That's a very young man making a mistake because he's green behind the ears. Yeah. He wouldn't make that mistake in 3 years when he's matured. But without that, though, I mean, do you really credit United with earning that goal? That's not, if you take that out, what did they do in open play?
No.
But when they played Liverpool towards the end of the season, going into that game, I think, if you were a United supporter, you think, oh my God, we're going to get beat today. And if you were a Liverpool supporter, you were quietly optimistic that you should have been able to overturn them based on the fact that United were playing poorly at that time. And they just turned it around and we allowed them to get back in the game. That's the thing that frustrates me about Liverpool. You know, watching them, it's like you take the lead and you'll concede first. How many games did we concede first last year?
We were running a streak of like 13 or 14 in a row, something like that.
The stats were not good.
Insanely bad.
Yeah. So Liverpool,
Well, here's the question I have for you. This is what I'm interested in knowing. Yeah. So after we talked about Ferguson. We talked about his dominance. We talked about the coin being flipped on the other side. Liverpool's on the losing side of the rivalry. They're on the losing side of the league championship. Yeah, a couple of FA Cups here and there, a couple of Carabao Cups here and there. We did get the Champions League in 05, won the Europa League or UEFA Cup, and we won the treble under Souness, I think it was. My question to you is this: when after 15 years of mediocre, well, it was actually more than that, but after really 25 years of good to average to mediocre results, what were your impressions when Klopp was hired? And what were your impressions when he left?
When he was hired?
Yes. When you knew he was coming from Borussia Dortmund, what did you think of this guy named Jurgen Klopp that's coming from Germany that's taken over Liverpool?
So he was an unknown entity to a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
As Arne Slot is an unknown entity.
Well, we're going to get to him.
Okay, yeah.
We're going to get to him. Don't worry. This is Liverpool's return to dominance. Did you think when he was hired, that's the guy?
Yeah,
that's the guy that's going to be the next Paisley.
Immediately, because not only did he criticize the fan base for not getting behind them, you know what I mean? He wanted active participation, and he encouraged everybody to participate. He made the people feel in the stadium like they were the 12th man. He made them feel that they were participating in something special. Yeah. And he's like, we may not win it today, but we most probably will win it tomorrow, and I need you all on board. So he amalgamated, he got everybody together, he brought the city, the people together, and he was a man of the people, and he got a strategy on the field with the limited funds, the limited quality of the professional footballers under his guidance, and he got them playing as an incredible, well-oiled unit, and he got some strategies and plans, and we started to bang in some goals. He made some great transfers. Look at Mane. Look at Robertson, right?
Salah, 40 million.
Yeah.
He's now valued later at 150. But you talk about really the plug, Genie Wijnaldum. I mean, that was core. He was your box-to-box midfielder that could do everything.
Yeah. And I know you want to talk about Trent late.
That's going to be the last guy we talk about.
Okay, so you're going to talk about Trent for England, or you're going to talk about
Talk about him for Liverpool, because he's not a transfer. He came from the academy.
Right.
He's a Scouser. So he's the one guy that was brought up at age 16 or 17, and Klopp saw something in him. So continue.
So this is my observation, Nick, and it's just, I think most probably a lot of people will agree that Trent, as talented as he is, he's not a natural right back.
Yeah, he isn't.
However, talking of Klopp, Klopp recognised something in him as a young man where he could utilise his skill set.
Mm-hmm.
So when Liverpool were dominating the midfield, when we had
Fabinho,
Wijnaldum,
Hendo's legs,
yep. Right? And Thiago when he played.
Millie.
Yeah. When Liverpool kept possession in the midfield, right? We were allowed then to be less oppressed by the other team, right? Yes. The other teams were less offensive.
Correct.
And so it allowed Trent to come into the game and use his dead ball skills, his natural passing ability, and his assists.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, awesome. So Klopp was genius in the way that he utilized Trent. But the way that it all transpired is sometimes as the players move on and they get older, we had to rely on Trent as more of a traditional left back. And I think that's not his strong suit. This is a right back, sorry. So, you know, Trent's a great player, but you've got to know his strengths and weaknesses.
We also talked about this last week, you and I did, outside the shop. They got a replacement for Robbo in case of emergency in Tsimikas. They never really have done that for Trent. Yeah. There's been no replacement right back. I think, like we said, I have to go back. What was it? Nathaniel Klein, I think, was the guy before him. If I'm not mistaken, I may be mistaken. But, you know, they've played Millie at right back sometimes. They played Gomez there sometimes. Those are not – I came from another side. I was bought as a right back. I've been playing right back for 5 years. Now I'm going to graduate to Liverpool. And this is – if Trent gets injured, I am the guy.
Yeah.
And this is my natural position where I am – we never did that. In the 7 years that Trent has started for Liverpool, he's been the right back. And then if he got injured or if something happened, you know, yellow card, got to get him off, it was always a plug-and-play sort of we'll put you here for now. But, you know, Millie, whoever it was, you know, that Gomez a lot of times in the past few seasons. So – It's just, and we'll talk about how this translates into England, the English national team. But when we talked about the transfers, one of the things that Klopp was excellent at was developing the talent. But every single player that he bought was with the vision of his tactical philosophy. Somebody like Firmino, where he said, I need a false nine. His first big transfer people forget about was Bobby Firmino. That was instrumental in terms of like that summer becoming in. And I think that was 2015. That wasn't even Klopp. That was still Brendan Rodgers. So Firmino was there when Klopp got there, but he knew him from Hoffenheim from managing BVB and says, my God, this is the perfect guy. He is going to be my false nine. And he's exactly what I want because I'm going to get these two wingers. And it took him a minute. Okay. Step number two, get Sadio Mane. Step number three, wait one more season, get this guy Salah, who was a Chelsea bust that went to Roma. Now he's back up to 40 mil. That's that we can afford. That's no big deal. Now you have your wingers. You fill in Wijnaldum in there a couple year or two earlier. Now you have your box to box midfielder. It was all coming together. And then, of course, 2019, it all came together. Champions League, FIFA Club World Cup, 2019, 2020, Premier League, all of it. All you saw. Did you? That's what I'm asking you. Did you envision Klopp being able to succeed that kind of being able to achieve that kind of success when he first came to Liverpool?
Not initially, but everybody, as a lifelong supporter, everybody was looking at the progress he was making, and you could see the positive strides he was taking. I mean, he was winning games where you think he should never have won. I mean, like, oh my God, we're really, like, you know, the players are giving 110%.
The Allison header and against West Brom, wasn't it?
To go to Champions League.
Allison comes down on the last play.
Yeah.
He's the goal is unprotected and they have a corner. It's the last, they said after this they're going to blow the whistle. And Allison scores a header to put us up 2-1 and we get top 3. It's insane. Yeah, those players fought for him with everything they had.
So Klopp's been an incredible inspiration to all of the players, to all of the club, and to the people of Liverpool. He's now the normal one of legendary status, right? Okay?
Right.
So, you know, people will wish him all of the best. But there are some things that pissed me off watching Liverpool over the years that I'm like, oh, my God, why do you do that? Simple things, right? Zonal marking, right? The opposition has a corner kick and they're doing the zonal marking. It drives me crazy because you're not great at it, right?
Right.
Put somebody on the post. Put somebody on the back post if you're going to zonal mark. Because how many goals have we conceded from a set piece where there's been no one on the post? Do your little zonal marking in the six-yard box to defend the corner. But just put somebody on the line as well. The idea to defend is to make the goal smaller. So it's been incredulous to me that I'm like, oh, there you go. We've conceded another goal. If we had somebody on the back post, we might not have conceded. So this zonal marking, I don't feel, has been great for Liverpool at all times.
So what was the shift in... Because we've basically been playing defense the same for most of the time, that he, for most of his tenure. Was it the players lost in the transfer market, VVD's injury, maybe the hunger goes away because you've won all those trophies, you're not as hungry anymore? Why are we conceding goals in 2021, 2022, 2023, and 2024? We weren't conceding in 2018, 2019, 2020. As for that back line, a lot of the names were still the same. So what happened?
Well, you can arguably say, first off, the opposition got much better.
Okay.
Or you could say, I'm watching Liverpool conceding these goals, and it's actually maybe a lack of concentration that I'm watching, right? I mean, that was an easy goal for them to concede, right? It was an easy goal for them to score. It's... maybe the midfield's not as good, so we're being exposed at the back. Maybe that's another reason.
That is absolutely the reason last season, yes, and the season before. So when the 2022 campaign, where we got basically, we played, I don't know how many matches, like 60-something matches we made. We were going for the quad. We played in the FA Cup final, the Carabao Cup final. We played for the title until the last day. And we put in the Champions League final, and that team exhausted all resources. I don't feel that summer did them anything. I don't feel like they recovered. I think that, yeah, but the midfield, Hendo's legs were toast by that point. You're right. So the midfield got worse.
Yeah, Gigi was sold.
Yeah.
Like,
and I knew we were in trouble the very first match day of the next season against Fulham, when they absolutely harassed us for 90 minutes. And I'm like, okay, this is a bad sign. But I wanted to go. To me, and you can want both of your opinions on this, the only weakness Klopp had was his stubbornness to adjust. I felt like there were many times where if you look at the lineup, he should really be playing maybe a 4-2-3-1. It would be better suited for that. And he was going to stick with the 4-3-3 no matter what. He played 4-2-3-1. He played different formations at Dortmund, depending on what the opponent, but also who's on the team sheet.
Yeah, the lineup.
So he never really did that at Liverpool. If you remember correctly, after it was in this, I think it was this past preseason, we dabbled a little bit with the three-man back line, and we moved Trent to left to right wing back.
Yeah.
And they said, "Oh, well, this is going to be a new look. They're gonna play to their strengths." And then when the season came, we never saw it again.
Yep.
So my only criticism of Klopp would be that sometimes, as Carlo Ancelotti said, he's too predictable.
Yeah.
And we found that out in the Champions League final, because the man that ended the streak with Everton was Ancelotti, and the man that ended the Champions League dream for Liverpool for them to win their second under Klopp was also Carlo Ancelotti.
Yeah.
He said, "Jurgen Klopp, all respect due, he's going to do exactly what he always does. Yeah. He will not adjust."
Yeah.
So I wanted your takes on that. Do you see that maybe that's his only weakness, is that, like, hey, we're going to play 90 minutes just like this, and if we win, we win. We lose, we lose.
Nick?
Yeah, I love Klopp, man, and what he did when Mane, Firmino, and Salah were up front. Those are some of the best, with Gigi and Hendo and the Brazilian
Fabinho?
Fabinho, yes. Yeah. That was one of my favorite Liverpool sides to watch. And once that got really broken up, that core, Klopp didn't want to switch, like you said, his formation. He would just plug in those other players. And I do think sometimes his unwillingness to change in game sometimes did hurt. I mean, like you said, Fulham, it took most recently, it took, what, didn't Endo score a goal in like stoppage time or something in that game?
Fulham, I'm talking the 2022-23 season.
Well, I'm talking
season.
About this year.
This past year?
Yeah, remember?
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
I'm just saying about Klopp, his unwillingness to change. I mean, Fulham were banging goals against y'all last year.
We beat them, I think, 4-3 or something.
Yes, because of a wonder goal in stoppage time.
That's right, yes.
But I think that was his problem, man. I mean, you got a genius like Carlo who knows exactly what Klopp's going to do. He's not going to change this. He's not going to change that. And Carlo was set up for it. I mean, Klopp wasn't going to change what he was going to do.
We watched – Steven and I watched the Real Madrid Champions League final in 2022 at his house.
And also Courtois played – he was on that.
Granted, but let's not talk about Real Madrid's keeper. Let's talk about Liverpool's attack.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is, Carlo Ancelotti said, "Okay, you're going to have 70% possession. We're not going to fight you on that. You can have the ball all day. We're going to park it right here. Salah's going to cross.
Yeah.
Mane's going to cross.
Yeah.
Salah's going to cross. Mane's going to cross. If you have a free kick, Trent's going to cross. And every single time you cross, either Courtois is going to get his hands on it, or we're going to head it out.
Yeah.
We're going to clear it.
Predictable."
Yeah. Predictable. And he said,
and that was his problem.
That's what he's going to do. And one of these times, Vinny Jr. is going to get down that fucking wing.
And skin Trent alive.
And he's going to skin Trent alive. And it was just that one time in the second half that he needed to. And they said, 1-0 is going to be the final, because they're going to say, just like with City. They said, City, you guys can have the ball.
Yeah,
we don't care.
Yeah,
you're done. And so, and Klopp, at that point, you're like, okay, well, you have 30 minutes to go to equalize.
Yeah, change something.
Change something.
Yes.
Do something. And it was the same stuff.
And
you and I looked at each other like, we know 65th minute, this is going to end 1-0.
Yeah.
There's nothing. Real Madrid's like, you've been doing this for 65. Actually, you've been doing this for 60 match days.
Yeah.
So it ain't going to work against us.
Yeah.
And you're not playing West Brom. You're playing Real Madrid. They have the talent. And if you get caught on the counter with them, that's what happens. So that was my only criticism of him, was the predictability, and what I never really thought of it as a true weakness until Ancelotti put it in that way. And you look at Ancelotti's record against Klopp, it's like Klopp's record against Pep. Who's got the most wins against Pep?
Yeah.
Klopp does. Klopp knows how to beat Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
Well, Ancelotti knows how to beat
Klopp.
Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things. Now we're in a new era, Steven, so Arne Slot, right? So he comes in, and my. So we just talked a lot about Ten Hag, and we talked about Van Gaal also being at Manchester United.
Also being Dutch.
That's where I'm going with this. Yeah. So Dutch managers, we talked about on this program extensively about Peter Bosch going to Leverkusen, going to Borussia Dortmund, not having a lot of success. So here's another Dutch manager, another guy who's won cups in Holland and league championships in Holland, and Feyenoord was on top of the world, and it's time for slot ball. So your first impressions, when you heard that we were hiring him, what did you think?
Obviously, you're going to be optimistically positive about it. You have to be.
Yes.
Right. Now, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What slot's natural position as a player? What position did he play as a player?
You know, I don't even know the answer to that.
That's a good question. Because we might criticise England currently under the current manager because he's a very defensive manager, right? I'd like to know where slot is in his natural place on the field.
Mm-hmm.
That might influence how he is as a manager. I don't know.
He's a midfielder.
He was a midfielder. Yeah. Okay, so maybe he'll have an affinity for the midfield, right?
Which wouldn't be a bad thing.
Right, So that's something I'd like to point out. Obviously, he's going to have his own management style. And from all accounts, he's nobody's fool. I think I'm getting the impression, and I've seen some video clips of him in the Eredivisie.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That he's tough. He's tough on the players, and he's nobody's fool. So I'm hoping that tactically, he's going to be, smart. Now, he has no experience of the Premier League. Now,
that's the worry part. Yeah.
That's the Premier League is arguably the most difficult league to play in
because there's just an abundance of talent. And there's so many playing styles, so many nationalities. It's not an English league anymore. It's a global league.
Yeah. So I'm hoping he's bright and he's smart.
Yes.
And he'll adapt quickly to the Premier League. So he's going to need some time to find his feet. And I think he'll get a lot of he'll get patience from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
If he's playing positive football, I think he'll win people over. If he's playing negative football, he'll soon get found out. So, what can you say? He's an unknown, tested manager in the Premier League. I've got to believe he's better than Ten Hag.
Yeah.
The one guy that we talked, I think it was Cody Gakpo. I think he said, I played for both of them because he's Dutch. And he said that tactically, Slot is the better manager. He said, man management, Ten Hag is the better manager, which the United players fought for him against City. Maybe that is true because they're literally fighting for their manager's job, and they won. So one concern I have, Stephen, is Klopp's superpower was the bond between him and his players. They loved him. They like we just said, they fought. Allison's coming down from the goal in the box. Let's do this one corner kick to get the top three. He heads it in. There was some record he broke that day. It's like the fifth ever keeper in English history to score on a final play.
Yeah.
It just all sorts of stuff. And I think that's the match where Allison maybe had just lost his father. So it was even more. I think if my memory serves me correctly, I think it was just very emotional. And those players would die for Klopp.
Yeah.
They have to have at least not the same, but a close to that relationship with Slot, because if he goes in there like Mourinho and says, you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck. I don't see him doing that, but I'm saying, that's the one turnoff about Mourinho is Mourinho will throw you under the bus like you're a dumbass in a heartbeat. I mean, he will tell you and the media that you're a piece of crap.
Right.
Slot has already had one good press conference. The one thing he shares with Klopp that he's been able to achieve that Klopp has, the only thing we can judge him on is the opening press conference when he was introduced and he did a really good job. He was very sharp. But we're not going to see anything until preseason, and the preseason is going to be very watered down because of the Copa America and because of the Euros. So we're going to miss a lot of players, Nunez, Diaz, all these players that are in our starting 11. They're going to get extended summer vacations now because they've been playing basically since the start of last season.
Yeah, a whole nother season.
Yeah, so they're going to get an extended break. We're not really, and that hurts Liverpool and like these teams like City that have so many this might be a year where, say, an Aston Villa or somebody can get a
jump start
because these other teams are going to have tired legs because they've been playing football for almost 12 months nonstop. Yeah. So my question is, what are you expecting in the Ipswich match week one?
I'm expecting Liverpool as a Premier League side who's got, you know, a lot of great history under a brand new manager, his flagship day out. I'm expecting them in minimum to be fucking organised, mm-hmm. right? Everybody knows what their job is. There's a pre-game plan, yeah. right? I mean, I'm not expecting them to go and win the game completely, but I'm just expecting them to be organised and know what and how to move the ball around
yeah.
and have a game plan. That's all I can expect on the first game,
yeah.
right? That's all I can ask for. There was something that just came to my mind mm-hmm. Regarding the hierarchy of the new Liverpool, right? Because did we not bring in Michael Edwards?
Yeah, he's back. Yes.
He's back.
Yes. He's now, back as sporting director. Yeah.
So here's what I'm thinking about that. Michael Edwards is going to be the sporting director. A sporting director's duty is to find the talent,
yeah.
right? So I'm hoping that pre-season, the January transfer window, he's going to know exactly which players available in Europe, what their contract clause is, what their signing clause is. I think he's going to be an asset, right? He's going to yeah. become an asset again to Liverpool. So I think he'll be finding the new talent. So historically, Klopp would have a say, Mourinho would have a say, Ferguson would have a say on what players that they bring in because they would know the man that they wanted. What's the managerial role for Arne Slot? Is he just going to be the coach or is he going to have some influence on the talent that's brought in? I mean, this is a dynamic shift that's going to be slightly different than Klopp, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this is an adjustment that Liverpool's football club is going under right now. How's that going to affect Arne Slot as a manager? How's that going to affect his thinking? It's like, well, he's not my guy. So, you know, I don't know the dynamics of man management that you talk about, yeah. right? So I think Liverpool all have to be on the same page when it comes to the decision-making.
Name me three players that you think their time is up at Liverpool. If you were Slot and you said, and I said to you, you must get rid of three. I'm Michael Edwards. I am your boss. And I said, look, you tell me, we need some new blood, but I need some funds. I need to get some funds. So you tell me three people that you would like me to move out in order to get, say, Anthony Gordon, yeah. for example, somebody like that, or this Calafiori guy from Bologna.
Yeah.
Name me three players who you, Stephen, think they've done a good job, lots of trophies, thank you, but it's time's up.
You name some players and I'll tell you what they should stay or go.
Salah. We start with him.
Salah. Okay. Can Salah be an asset? Yes.
Yeah.
Can he be an asset? I would rather have Salah on the team than not. But talk about stubbornness. Sometimes he would play Salah. Like, he would bring Salah on as a sub in the second half. I'm of the philosophy when you're talking about the stubbornness of Klopp.
Yeah.
Why don't we go 1-0 lead? If Salah doesn't have the 90 minutes in him, right, let's go 1-0 up, 2-0 up, and then bring Salah on. So I felt like Klopp was always chasing the game when he brought Salah on, because
yeah.
Salah only mm-hmm. had half an hour in his legs this yeah. particular time. So this is the thing that might have frustrated me about Klopp going back. Do we keep Salah? Yes.
Okay, yes. Alisson.
Okay, well, you and I had a brief conversation about this, and it's controversial, Nick.
Yeah.
Listen to me. Do we sell Alisson for a boatload of money, right?
Yeah.
And keep Kelleher, right? Who's a young 22-year-old talent. And I felt that Kelleher, in the absence of Alisson,
did good.
He didn't make me nervous. No. I mean, he made one or two mistakes where he went through his friggin' legs, and I saw that. But generally speaking, he's good with his feet. I find him to be aware and intelligent
mm-hmm. yeah.
when the ball's around.
Yeah.
He's got great reflexes. Mm-hmm. So do we just sell Alisson, who's not really endeared himself to me towards the end of last season, and do we keep Kelleher for the next 10 years? because Kelleher wants to leave his if he doesn't get
first. Yeah, he got first. He said he wants to go.
So that's a difficult question to ask, and I don't know. That's for Liverpool Football Club because they know Kelleher better than I.
Okay,
yeah, but if you had no choice, would you keep? You have to pick one. You have no choice.
I'm
Keller. I told you that. Too. I watch Keller with my own eyes.
I am.
Allison will make the bonehead move and run into Virgil van Dijk when you got a ball in the sky and cost a goal against Arsenal when you were in a title race.
Yes.
Where Keller will stay back and he'll let Virgil van Dijk do his job.
The other thing that you pointed out was the old guy. What was the old guy's name that was the backup keeper? I can't think.
Adrian.
Oh yeah, when Adrian was in,
yeah, the Spanish.
That guy made us nervous.
Yeah,
Kelleher didn't, and that's the difference between the two.
Yeah,
right. When Allison goes out 3 years ago, and Adrian comes in, you're like,
yeah,
fuck.
Okay.
Now last year when we said, Allison stubbed his pinky toe, he's
we were happy,
and I was like, well, Kelleher is awesome. Yeah, I can't have a problem with that. You're like, pretty. The sky's falling. I'm like, no, it's all good.
Yeah.
Let's get to the people that you want.
Yes, okay.
You want to get rid of.
But here, I'm only doing those because I'm asking you where you stand on it. So this man's contract is running out soon. He has not signed an extension, and he just so happens to be the captain. We know what he is. We know who he is. Is he worth re-signing, Virgil van Dijk? Keep or sell?
Oh, that's a tough one because, you know, he's been such a great ambassador. He's been such a great guy. You mean he's turned it around for us with his headers and his last-minute goals all of the time. But I feel for some reason he's lost a bit of pace.
He's your captain.
And unfortunately...
You're not wrong on that.
No.
Unfortunately, the teams are getting better around us.
Yeah.
They're getting faster. A lot of these...
not getting faster.
A lot of these centre-forwards for the other teams... Sprinting athletes,
yeah,
you know what I mean.
Oh yeah.
So,
might help, and I'll give you this because you're on the topic right now, talking about VVD. Okay, Klopp and Slot differences. Slot might not play with such a high line to where VVD has to be, Carl Lewis to get back there. Yeah. He might play in a more traditional spot where he can actually. Recover quickly. Yes, VVD is not beating most center forwards and certainly not wingers when it comes to getting back. And that's going to leave Allison exposed in a 1v1. But if you play a different philosophy tactically and say, hey, Virgil, don't come up that far.
Yeah, stay back.
Because Klopp played with, he's live or die by the high line. That's live or die by the sword. That is how it works. And you might win a match 4-3, but you're going to give up 3.
Yeah, you're going
to. I'm okay with winning a match 2-0.
Yeah.
Very fine with that. So that's my thing. If you say, let's give Virgil one more year in this man's system.
Yeah.
But understand, he's got 1 year left in his contract. If it doesn't work out, he leaves next year on a free.
Oh, yeah.
Think about that. That's what you cash in on VVD for what you can get right now. Or do you say, look, we'll see where you are, evaluate, and if we can get you.
Well, how much do you get for Virgil right now?
Probably.
You don't get as much as you did 3 years ago.
35 or 40 for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's 31 or 32.
But I think he's worth keeping if you're going to sell him for 30 or 40.
I think so too.
Yeah,
I keep him for no less for just the leadership part.
Yeah, he's your captain,
Andy Robertson.
He's not been playing great.
Well, couple matches at the end of the season, he was one of the better.
But
he not? Remember, we watched.
Yeah,
a
when he saved Virgil's ass.
Yes, a that. Couple times.
Yes, yeah. Well, against, I think it was Palace was about to go up 2-0.
Yes, and he ran back
and VVD said, thanks.
"Yeah."
Literally,
afterwards,
like,
he went over
my ass,
and patted him on the back.
Yeah,
I think I'd like to keep him because he always plays.
He gives his all
with his with passion.
Yeah.
Like he does. He's not intimidated by anybody.
Yeah.
And he gives it his best.
Yeah.
He plays for the club. He plays for the shirt.
Can I say this then? Can we sell? Can we get rid of Tsimikas and then make Andy Robertson the new Tsimikas and maybe buy a new left back that's starting?
Yeah.
Can I do that?
Dream on.
Okay.
Find somebody as good as Andy Robertson.
We'll look. Yeah. Well, right. There's this guy. Well, I was thinking about. Well, you can place him there. Well, there's some guys from Bayern that I wouldn't want to have.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So a couple more for you, Darwin Nunez.
I think we keep him.
Okay.
You know why?
Because he's great for Uruguay.
Because he's great for Uruguay.
Yeah.
Well, he is. He's a stud.
Let's take a positive from that.
Yeah.
If he's scoring for Uruguay, his own personal confidence is good. So yeah. I love that for him. Yes. Right? So yeah, that's a great, right. That's a great positive. So, you know, we just have to adjust the size of the goals, right? Just have to make it like a little bit bigger for him, right? Because he hit the
more
record.
Taller.
And fix his timing because his offside number is outrageous.
Yeah, that's what it is, Stephen, is offside.
He can't stay onside to save his life, man.
Yeah, not for Liverpool.
For Uruguay, he's prime.
Because Uruguay and Porto play a different game than us, where he's most probably running on to the ball. I haven't seen the Uruguay games in which he scored, unfortunately.
They do play stylistically different.
Yeah, so, they have Bielsa, who was Leeds manager when Leeds was scoring 3 or 4 a game.
So to slot it just as game for Nunes? I don't know if he's going to score all of these goals. Would you not like you to? This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Tactically playing to your players' strengths, right?
Yeah.
So Nunes. Now, when we watch the game, well, unfortunately, we're not at Anfield, right? We're not at the game, so we can't see the players' movement off the ball because we can only see like 2/3 or half of the pitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But by all accounts, to the pundits on the television. They say that Nunes causes great problems when he's not on the ball because he's dragging players away from the game.
Chaos.
Right?
Yeah.
So because you have to man mark him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have no choice.
But I mean, he showed, for me, glimpses of brilliance last year where he's took a couple of shots where he's bent it in from outside the box. And I'm like, you go. He's ran onto the ball once or twice and scored a couple of goals. I mean, I want to keep Nunes.
Okay, so I got 3 more for you. One should be very quick. I think that we can all agree on this. Joe Gomez.
Okay, let's be fair. No, Nick.
I thought that was going to be, get rid of it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Gomez. For me, as an English player, if you look at all of the English players of his generation, I'm sad to say and I'm disheartened to say that I felt like Joe Gomez never reached the full potential of what he could have done, you know?
Agreed.
And that's the sad thing for me, for Gomez.
Yeah.
Do we feel that we keep him? And if we can get a better replacement, I'll let him go.
What position? So, I mean, he plays everything, but I guess primarily he's a center back. But they already say that they have a better replacement in him called Konate.
No, we'll keep Gomez and sell Konate.
Keep Gomez and sell Konate. Nick, you on board? That's a tough one.
Golly, I don't know.
Konate's gotten injury bug.
Yeah, they both have Bozo gene in them to make some mistakes. But Gomez, I feel, Konate is doing perfectly fine for France right now.
That's what I'm saying. Again,
he could fit in slops. I would try Konate probably a little bit more than Gomez, just because Gomez, age-wise and whatnot, I feel like he's falling off. It's a hard one. I mean, I feel that's down to just personal opinion. But you don't like Konate at all, and I don't necessarily like him much either. But I think with what he's done for France, maybe he can change it around with Slot. And maybe Gomez go. I mean, it's a hard one, man.
Canate's doing great for France because he's in with a world-class team.
Yes, he's surrounded by the world-class players.
So when he's taken the responsibility as Liverpool centre-back, unfortunately, I'm not dogging on him.
Yeah.
I just feel like he's not good enough. I've seen the mistakes. Yeah. If you look at the Champions League's games where we conceded the goals, he was completely out of position. He didn't read the game well. Yeah. I don't feel that his close quarter, when the ball's at his feet and he's in a tight situation, I don't feel he's got the skill set to bring the ball out. I mean, if he's on the ball, he's got pace and he can move the ball out. And I think his heart's in the right place and he is very young and will he improve? Yes. But I don't ultimately think he's good enough for Liverpool Football Club without ambition.
Not a very good answer. The last two for you. Cody Gakpo.
Okay, he's playing great for the Dutch team yesterday.
We keep this. You see the trend? They keep playing great for their flag, but they're not really playing great for their badge.
I think we keep him for now. You know why? Until we can find somebody better. That's it. Because he is a disappointment that he doesn't get involved in the game. Like, Nunes will cause havoc, right?
He will. He will absolutely cause
Luis
havoc. Luis
Diaz
yes.
will cause yes. havoc, right? Yeah. Okay. My favorite, Jota, causes havoc.
Yeah, he's not up for discussion here. He's still.
Yeah. He causes havoc. Cody Gakpo doesn't cause havoc.
No.
He's too polite.
Yeah. No one's worried about
it. You know what I mean? If he gets the ball, like,
whatever.
If you give him an open goal, he'll score
score.
You know?
Yeah.
But is he going to create? I don't think he's creative enough. I don't think he's got the bit between his teeth. He's not. I mean, everybody's stylistically different. I think he's pretty on the ball. I think he moves the ball around nice. I think he's mentally focused and he's aware. He reads the game well. He tries to get into positions. But I don't think he's going to turn the game over for you.
Yeah.
And so the final one. So the reason there's names not being mentioned here is because they're definite keepers. So we're talking about Harvey Elliott. Yeah. We're talking about
Jota.
Szoboszlai. Yeah. We're talking about Jota. We're talking about McAllister. These guys are guys that were either bought in the last season. Harvey Elliott coming up and improving. Jota is a natural goal scorer. If we could just tune down the injuries a little.
Yeah.
The last one I have for you is another guy who, if he were playing street football and doing trick shots off the back top of a roof, he'd be making a lot of money. But that's not how it's played, and that is Luis Diaz. And his dad is already pushing him to go to Barcelona. So
well, that's the dream for the Latinos, isn't it?
Yes.
That's the dream for them. It's like, that's the epitome.
Yeah,
that's the coronation of their culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't blame Diaz wanting to go to play for Barcelona if that's his childhood dream, right? Will he be sadly missed? Yeah. I mean, he gives it 110% in a Liverpool shirt, right?
Yeah.
I wish we had more of a game plan because he can go running and not really know
erratic.
What he's doing. He's erratic. He's running at the goal and he doesn't really know what his next move is, right?
Yeah, he does. You're absolutely right.
You know what I mean?
We talked about this. He thinks in the moment, not he doesn't look ahead. It's not. We all were here in this very same room a few months ago. We watched him twist Kyle Walker around like a pretzel.
Yeah.
And what was the end result? He shoots the ball off of Walker's face.
It goes,
and it goes, I mean, you got a corner out of it, but
there's
no, it's like this great build up and there's no follow through to actually creating a shot.
Yeah.
And it's just a bunch of pretty dribbling and it looks great. And the defender gets his boots knocked off of him. But it either goes out of bounds, it's a goal kick, or maybe it's a corner if you kick it off the defender, but it ultimately doesn't lead to much. And that's where when they said, Luis Diaz did not score in his final 13 appearances for Liverpool, you're like, holy shit, that's bad. I'm sorry, you're another one of those guys that Spurs were looking at him. We knew they were going to pull the trigger. We went and bought him. We beat them to the punch because if Liverpool says, we want you, you're not going to Tottenham. So he says, yeah, I'm going to join this guy, Klopp. The system fits me perfectly. He comes in, and he really hit it off running. But again, it's like Klopp's predictable sometimes. His players, therefore, are predictable sometimes. And I feel like they're like, well, we figured Luis Diaz out. He'll dribble into a corner. He'll dribble into a double team. He's being marked by two people. You're not getting off that pass. Well, now you're in a position where the passing lanes are shut. And it's just frustrating to see him constantly shoot down the wing. He's late to cut in. He's late to cut in sometimes. He doesn't make the pass when he should and he doesn't cut in when he should. It's like he's like a second too late in doing what he wants to do. Because he's not thinking of it like, okay, that's my next move. It's like very reactionary. Like, okay, this guy's in front of me. What do I do right now? Well, what do you do to get around this guy? And more, where are your teammates?
Yeah.
Have you looked up?
That's the other question.
He's dribbling with his head down. And it's like, you know, look up. You know, Gakpo could be in the box or, you know, whoever could be in the box. And it's, you know, Jota is much better at the vision. Like, I'm at the box, but I'm going to shoot it from there. This is how I'm going to get there. Diaz is very much just it's like taking a bunch of spaghetti noodles and tossing them around in a bowl. It's just but what he does do, he creates chaos, whereas Gakpo doesn't. But it's unorganized chaos, dysfunctional chaos.
Yeah. So how long has Diaz played for Liverpool?
I believe 2.5 seasons.
Two and a half seasons? Is that
right? He came in the middle of 2022, right? Yeah. So that's all 2022, 2023, and then 20. Yeah, two and a half seasons.
Okay.
I feel like we've had enough sample size at this point.
Okay. I think under a new manager, he might be able to improve. It's yet to be seen.
That's a statement we can make about every single name that we've
that
made.
That is here. True. Yeah.
That is true.
Let's keep Diaz for now.
If this were Klopp, I would say get rid of him right now because but that's
he's working for Colombia. He's another one. He's doing great.
Well, it's all the drugs he does.
Yeah. So
he's getting free coke.
Yeah. So, as a lifelong Liverpool fan who's watched Liverpool over the course of you know, the last few years, looking back, I remember watching Robbie Fowler, and he would score on a dime. He would turn like Robbie Fowler was the most natural finisher that I've seen, along with Rooney, right?
Yeah.
Natural finishers.
Yeah, Rooney,
So for me, right now, looking at Liverpool, I think our most natural finisher is Diogo Jota. I think he's our best finisher.
Absolutely. Yeah. No question.
Yeah. So
no
that's
question.
What, you know, so I'm impressed with Jota. Up to, you know, I would even put him on like, I mean, not as good as Fowler, but I'm just saying he's, it's rare I see a talent like Jota. You know what I mean? A natural
Agreed.
Finisher.
The only thing, my only gripe about him is too many injuries. But this is not a player I'm asking you to say whether we're going to sell him or whether we're going to keep him. I'm going to ask you, what would you do with him? And then we're going to transition to our last topic, which will be the English national team. But I want to know how would you handle the Trent Alexander-Arnold situation right now? Steven, is he a midfielder? Is he a right back? What the hell is he?
Is he
a set piece specialist? Is he David Beckham, 38-year-old David Beckham that only has a leg left to put it in the top of a corner on a free kick? Like, what is he? What does he bring to the table for Liverpool right now?
Trent?
Yeah.
What does Trent bring?
Yeah. We've talked about his worth this whole with 70 million, right? 70 million quid.
70 million is crazy. Trent was totally masked and covered by what Klopp did. You talked about it yourself.
Yes.
You said Klopp spotted his talents and what he was good at, and he put him in those positions to show that. With Klopp gone and with what we're seeing now with a different manager in Southgate, what we did see the first two games and what we see at the end of Klopp's run is just Trent isn't as talented and as good as people say. He has a couple set skills, which is free kicks and crosses. But other than that, man, the guy cannot defend. He's put on a plate by Vinny or any kind of winger, Alvarez, whoever the hell it is.
Well, now the domestic league is caught up. You have wingers, have wingers like Saka and those guys and the likes that will cook him.
Yes. So
it's not just Vinny Jr. Vinny Jr. was the one that really exposed
him. Exposed it, yeah.
And then everyone else, if you have pace, you can beat Trent.
Yes. Yeah. And I think when Klopp didn't pull him up a little bit and maybe switch some things around when he stuck with his 4-3-3, it really showed this last season that Trent is definitely a liability. If someone offered me 70 million for him, I would take it in a heartbeat, even though he is a Scouser at heart and he is Liverpool through and through. This is a business and you want to win. I think Trent leaves a liability that you don't want in the Premier League. And I don't know if Slot is really going to be able to cover up what he is not good at, which is his position, which is a freaking defender. I mean, it just...
Here's
I
the thing,
I just,
to your point.
Yeah.
One of the things that we talked about a little while ago was the fact that Virgil van Dijk, if they don't play with such a high line, perhaps you put him in a better situation to succeed due to the fact that he won't get... Now, that's useless for Trent because his strengths are in the offense.
Yeah.
So you can't say, Trent, hold back, stay back, don't overlap. The whole point of you is an overlapping fullback. You are that by definition, because if you don't come forward and you don't put those crosses in and you don't use your foot, which is deadly to your advantage, then you're of no use to any football club because that is your strength. You're not a right back that's defensive minded. You're a right back that if you need to, you play it, but you're going to come up. You're in the attack. You're as much part of the attack and the link up play with Salah on that left side or the right side as anyone else in the game. So there is no that this brings my point. Okay, so is he a midfielder? Gareth Southgate has tried him out at midfield.
Yeah.
did Trent fail the assignment, or did Garrett Southgate's instructions fail Trent? That's to both of you. What is that? Because
combination of both. Maybe.
Because they said so. We've heard other Liverpool podcasts, if you will, pundits say it's not Trent's fault.
Yes, it's
not Trent's fault. And I, you know, to me, at some point, okay, Liverpool were struggling.
Yeah,
England were struggling.
Yeah.
When is it the player and not the manager? Because it certainly wasn't. Well, yeah. I mean, because you said he was masked. You said he was masked.
He was.
When you have Fabinho, who was a world-class number six in his prime, and you had Hendo, who I wouldn't say he's world-class, but he was very, very good.
Yes.
They could get back and cover you. Hey, I don't have to worry about this. Yeah. They've got my wing covered, right? Yeah. Trent, stay up. Okay.
Yeah.
Trent, I can't run 20 yards without getting gassed. Now my legs are trash. And Fabinho's been sold to the Saudis.
Yeah.
So that's it. It's over. Yeah, it's done. Now you have to fend for yourself. Yeah. So Gareth Southgate says you're not a right back. You know, that's true. You're a right mid. I'm gonna put you in the mid. But then he played him as a six, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, if he played him as a number six, and he's never played holding midfield.
He's the thing about Trent is right.
That was ludicrous.
He's never gonna win back the ball, right?
Yeah.
He's like, not.
You know, no, he'll lose it. It's like
real quick.
It's like Hendo and Fabinho, Wijnaldum. They would
ball winners.
They would win the ball back off the opposition.
Yeah.
And I don't see Trent doing that,
unfortunately,
you know. But if you give the ball to him, his redistribution is incredible, right?
Yeah, he'll get it. He'll get it on top of someone's head in that box, you know. But it just – it's both, man. You can attribute it to Trent's inability, and you can attribute it to Southgate's inability to tactically – give instructions tactically. I mean, Southgate being clueless and Trent not being able to really to show what he can do in that holding spot really shined in this England run. I mean, taken out.
Can we say this, that Trent is a luxury player that we used to have the luxury to have and now no longer have it due to the current roster?
Yes.
I agree with that.
Yes.
We have to improve significantly if we're allowed to carry Trent.
Right.
Now, what contribution does he make? When he's on the ball, his redistribution is incredible.
Yes.
His assists are incredible.
Yes.
His passing is technically perfect, right? His dead ball. Name a better dead ball specialist.
There's really
his free kick is amazing.
His free kicks are amazing. Yeah. Right. Maybe Toni Kroos, but
So I think Liverpool have to significantly increase their midfield in order to carry Trent.
Which was the idea behind McAllister and Szoboszlai. That was the idea. We're going to improve. That's why they bought midfield. And Gravenberg. Don't forget that guy. We didn't even talk about him. But, of course, he's year two, young kid. Yes, we're going to keep him. But the idea was that was the – okay, the year prior, we rebuilt the back line, supposedly. We really didn't, but – the next time we rebuild the midfields. Okay, so you bring in Gravenberg, you bring in Szoboszlai, you bring in McAllister, and say, okay, you have your now we got them. Start of last season, Liverpool's in first place. No one's saying anything. But quickly, as we saw, Szoboszlai got injured on was it Boxing Day or New Year's? I think it was New Year's against Arsenal. Yeah. His form dropped.
Yeah.
McAllister is now forced to do double duty. Now he's overwhelmed. Gravenberg goes down with an injury. It was around March time he went down with it. So now the midfield's injured. Now you don't have depth. Now Trent's out here. So it's a luxury when you have the players around him that can support his style of play. But currently, it's just not there. I mean, you have to find a number six, a whole number six that can cover those half spaces.
So relegate him to a squad player?
Too expensive for a squad.
He's got to sell.
I don't. Yeah, because that would put a fracture in between manager and player because he would say I've been here longer than you, asshole. You know this is my club.
Well, people have to adapt to the new manager.
They do. Yeah. I'm not arguing with you on that.
As a professional.
He's 26 years old though. Says I can play first team football anywhere.
Yeah.
Well then, okay. Yeah. I'm not arguing with you at all. I agree with everything you just said. For the record,
we're just making it straight.
Yeah, but I'm giving you a hypothetical that he's going to come back and say, "I've never not been a starter at this club, and this is my. I'm from here. I'm Scouse."
Yeah.
Well, that's a trend. I mean, some players are egotistical like that. You know, I'm thinking that Trent is not like that.
It is odd, though, would you not say, Nick, to have a 70 million rated player on your bench?
Yeah. Yeah, he would.
What, like City have got every day of the week?
Well, yeah.
That's the exception.
They have 100 million. They have Grealish on the bench, who's 115.
Yeah.
Oh, that's false.
I mean, we 70 is cheap for City to have.
You know,
on the bench.
What I like about Grealish? His hairstyle.
And
I always love to see that beautiful.
Which is funny because we said he celebrated more than anyone else when they won the title last year and did nothing. But he was carrying the trophy, right? He was taking selfies and it's like, dude, you didn't even break a sweat. You got more liquid on you from the champagne than you do from sweat playing the game. Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous. But so that brings me into this segue. So Trent national team has had a lot of struggles. Southgate seems to now have lost confidence in him. Didn't play last match. Did he play last match? Or did he come on?
Who? Jack?
No, Trent.
Trent.
Against the knockout.
Trent
stage.
Did not play.
Yeah, I don't think so. He came in late in the last match of the group stage, right?
I think he did, maybe. But he did not play against Slovenia or Slovakia.
Slovakia. Yeah, it's one of the Slows.
One of the Slows.
Slovakia, yeah. I think. Right?
He did.
Yeah, so what we said, is it coach? Is it player? And then I have to ask you this. Okay. This is a larger – so you look at Trent in a microcosm and say, okay, well, if it's just him that's not performing, then maybe it's the player. There is not a single player on the England team sheet – well, actually, Joe Gomez. But other than him, that any club in the world, Real Madrid, Barca, Bayern, doesn't matter who, that they wouldn't say, yeah, we'd love to have them on our team. This is one of the most talented England. I can't remember, honestly. I mean, I have to go back, right? 1998, look at that roster, see who was there in 2006. Beckham, Rooney, Gerrard, Lampard, all those guys. But this is like Kane up front is the deadliest number nine they've ever had in my lifetime. This is an elite England squad on paper. How many times do we see Southgate get criticized, and still the books had them to win it, right?
Yeah.
They were favored to win the Euro, right? They're like, they're going to figure it out. They're squeaking by every single game. They're getting, they needed a Jude Bellingham late equalizer to get to extra time the other day against Slovakia. They advanced and it's embarrassing that they're advancing in the way they're advancing. But yet here we are in the quarterfinals. They're still here. Why is this? They've had Sven-Göran Eriksson. They've had every manager you could possibly dream up under the sun. Why is this such a problem with England with all this talent? I just said Beckham, Rooney, Gerrard, Lampard. Why is there all this talent and the national team never seems to be able to win? When you definitely aren't lacking.
So on paper, you're saying we should be doing much better.
Yeah.
Yes. On paper. Yes. Statistically. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
They should be winning games 3-0.
I mean... Yeah. Might say, oh, we're just warming up into the competition now.
We're four games in and you were 5 minutes away from being knocked out. So get your warm-up gear on, buddy, because it's getting
just
a little close.
Even the England guy I ran into at the restaurant, he was like, yeah, well, that could have been the push we need. And I said, well, wasn't the loss to Iceland the push you needed in friendlies? Oh, no, that wasn't it. Well, was it the 0-0? Wasn't it the 1-0 win to Serbia? No, that was the push we needed. Every time something happens with England, it's always, that was the push we needed. Well, you've been pushed 6 matches now, and you're still needing pushes. Does that make sense? Like, every time I turn around, I hear England supporters say, well, that's what we needed. And it's like,
I fear that they're intimidated. I think the players are intimidated. I don't know whether it's because of the people of the nation or it's the press or the backlash, but it seems like they're not playing to their strengths. Now, why is that?
Is it because the expectations are high?
Yeah, of course. And it might be having a negative effect on them because I was watching the Slovenia game, right?
Yeah,
Slovakia, was it the last time?
That was the last one, knockout game, yeah.
So it was... all the way through the second half, I don't think they had a shot on goal.
Yeah, no, it was zero. They had 11 off target.
He and I were sitting. I picked England to win it, and Nick said, they're like, man, your pick to win is out in the round of 16. Like they're done. And I said, yeah, I'm wrong. I was wrong about him. And then Bellingham creates magic. And then at that point, like Nick said it best, talent wins over because Slovakia, the tank was empty.
Yeah.
Their gas is gone. They're on empty. They won't
be able to score better.
And then Kane comes in 91st minute and they say, park the fucking bus. It's over.
But at 80 minutes, you would not have bet a dime on England winning.
Jesus Christ.
Not 90 minutes.
Not 90 minutes, right? No. So this is the frustration that we've all got.
Yes.
The England players are really not showing initiative. They're not showing their strength. They're not. It's three lions on the chest.
Yeah,
right. But I'm not seeing much bravery to be honest with you.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
What's worse is that this is the first time this has happened. They have the player of the year in the Premier League. They have the player of the year in Germany, and they have the player of the year in Spain.
Yeah.
All on the English team. Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham, Phil Foden.
When they put an England shirt on, it's like they've never seen a football before.
Yeah, they're lost.
And how many times have we heard that line?
Yeah.
What is it about the white shirt with the three lions?
Yeah.
And that one, I think that one star haunts them so badly. Yeah. 1966.
Nick, you've seen it. You've been watching England more than I, most probably, because I've boycotted them.
I don't blame you.
You know what I mean? Here's a statistic. All of the major clubs were polled, right? All of the supporters were polled, right? And Liverpool ranks 10. Liverpool fans rank 10 out of 10, bottom of the ladder when it comes to the support of the England national squad. And to the FA in general.
Yeah.
And I think this goes back to the political dynamic.
Yeah. Yes.
But also the FA.
Yeah.
The Hillsborough disaster.
Yeah, that
right.
Disaster. Yeah,
so
right.
You know, just looking at it like that, I mean, there's a lot of malcontent
with
the people of Liverpool and the FA. You know,
oh for sure.
Yeah. You know,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, what I've been hearing, I a lot of the England fans, or at least they're having a little bit of humor with it. I feel because we're seeing all the funny videos and all the songs being released at Southgate. But a lot of people have given up on him, man. I mean, hell, I don't blame him either. I mean,
it's amazing to see a team that's in a quarterfinal of a major tournament that hardly anyone in the nation believes in. It's like, you shouldn't even be here.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But I say this, and I said this to him, and Nick said it really well. It's like, at some point, I said, great teams win when they don't play their best. That's a great team. And Nick said, but they haven't even played subpar in any game. When are they actually going to play a good game?
Yeah.
You can't, because you can have four good games. And let's say, you know, like Liverpool has one of those games against Fulham where they concede three, but a great team will score four and you'll win four. It's ugly, but you win. England is not winning ugly or pretty. They're winning by the skin of their teeth. It's like last minute corners, last minute this, last minute this, gasp of air. Like, this guy has got the defibrillator.
Yeah.
They're like, we're going to give it one more shot. And if he doesn't come out of it, we're going to pronounce him dead. Yeah. And they go kaboom. And then England springs to life like Frankenstein, scores a header, goes in the extra time, scores scores the 2-1, and then they park the bus and they advance. It's also been a great draw for them. They had an easy group.
Oh, the easy side of the bracket.
They got, easy side of the bracket. And we looked at this again because we thought yesterday they may be playing the Netherlands. And I said, well, that's it. I mean, they can't play like shit for 90 minutes against the Netherlands and win. That's just not going to happen. And no, they get the Swiss. And I said, well, the Swiss can beat them. No doubt about it. But that is, again, the Swiss are probably – of the final eight, they're not bad. We just saw them play Germany, and it was 1-1 in the game that Germany won the group. They're not better than Spain. They're not better than France. They're not better than the Netherlands. That you know, it's. Are they better than England on paper? No, but it's like England, and maybe you said it right. Maybe they're in their own heads. Maybe they're in their own way because there's a curse around it.
I'm trying to find a logical conclusion to why England are so boring.
Yeah.
Backwards passes, sideways passes, don't go forward. Yeah, I don't understand.
Look at Phil Foden, right?
Yeah.
He's one of the most exciting players when he's in a blue shirt for Manchester City. Yeah. I mean, when he touches that ball, you're like, oh my God, what's he going to do next? He's incredible.
Yeah, he's playing on the wing where he never plays. He's playing where someone like Mahrez or they were playing at City. He's playing out of – Southgate has him playing out of position. England are actually the favorite to beat Switzerland too, not by much. But, yeah, the football has been very bad. And they're – Phil just had a second baby, and they're – I guess there was complications with his wife, and they're saying that has so, something to do with Phil.
So making excuses why he's not a professional footballer?
Yes.
I understand.
That's what I was getting to is these excuses I'm hearing. Because of these lack of tactics and lack of playing have just been out of control.
One excuse you can't make, and you made this reasoning for Konate, and in his case, I agree with you, is that with France, he's surrounded by elite talent.
Yeah.
Foden's surrounded by elite talent in City, but he's also surrounded by elite talent for the English national team. So you can't say there's no excuse. No, it's not. Well, England sucks. It's like playing for like Holland with Norway.
Yeah.
That's not the same situation. Like, You're a very good player or an elite player in an elite side for both club and country. There is no excuse.
At the beginning of this conversation, I asked you what position does Arnie Slot naturally play, and you said midfielder.
Well, yeah, Nick looked it up.
Yeah. So thank you for that.
Yeah,
I might say that with Southgate being a natural defender, he doesn't know how to inspire or maneuver the forwards into an offensive game.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm just saying, because he's a defensive coach, he's not bringing out the best of the attacker.
Yeah. Well, so here's the final question for you then before we wrap up our segment. The 2023, sorry, what year are we in?
2024. Yeah.
The 2024-2025 season is weeks away from preseason.
Yes.
And by this time next month, we'll be 2 weeks out exactly from the start of the league. This is a two-part question. Where do you think in your heart that Liverpool will finish? Where do you think in your head that Liverpool will finish? What are your expectations this season?
I think we finished third last year because we were third best. I think Arsenal were much better and City were much better. I think Liverpool did well to finish third. Realistically, going into the new season, I would be happy with a top four finish. I think it's going to be more of a struggle. I think we're going to have this reset. I think it's going to take time for the players to acclimate themselves, you know?
Yeah.
I think we're going to need to do some squad member changes. I think the tactics are going to change. So it's really difficult to predict right now. I'm going to say we're going to finish fifth next year.
But I think that's very realistic. Well, Stephen, this has been a lot of fun. We cannot wait to have you back on. This is going to be a regular thing, and we're going to try and make this sort of a monthly, sub-monthly type of situation because, the insight is great. The dialogue is great. So, yes, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us.
Cheers, all. Pleasure, gentlemen.
All right. Again, many thanks to our friend Stephen for joining us here on the Beckham's Basement podcast. That was a fantastic, fantastic journey we took with him through Liverpool and the rise of the club, so to speak, with Everton and the not the rise of the club, but the rivalry they shared as two dominant powers in the 70s, 80s, all up into the 90s, and Liverpool's resurgence, how the rivalry shifted, talking about current players, Klopp, Slot, everything. Yeah, it was just a fantastic journey through the Reds and also their rivalries with Man United, Everton, and of course, the English national team we talked about. So yes, very much. And we're going to segue into the English national team right now, Nick, because we have two more things that we have to talk about. We have both the Copa America and the European Championship quarterfinal set. And by the time we talk next week, we will be looking at the
semifinals,
semifinals and the finals being on the cusp. So we're going to start here with the Copa America. Now, this is starting tomorrow at 9 p.m. We're going to have the quarterfinals
kick off.
Yeah, tomorrow at 9 p.m. So July 4th, you'll see Señor Messi playing against Ecuador. Then Friday, July 5th, Venezuela, Canada. Saturday is Colombia and Panama. And then also that day at 9 p.m., they're doing a doubleheader Saturday, Uruguay, Brazil. That's obviously the most the most, the biggest names going up against each other. I think two of these are very easy. Now, there's some surprises here. Canada and Venezuela. That's the one. One of these teams, Nick, that nobody had on the radar, nobody, is going to make a semifinal. Guaranteed to make a semifinal because they're matched up against each other. Yes. Oh, gosh. Venezuela.
Yeah, CONCACAF and South America.
Yes. Venezuela is playing Canada with a berth in the semifinals on the line.
Yeah.
The leading scorer in the tournament, Lautaro Martinez.
Yeah.
Of course, 4 goals, and they kick off tomorrow. So let's just preview these real quick. I mean, Ecuador and Argentina for me is – that's – Argentina all the way.
Yeah.
That's not even a question here.
Yeah, there's no need to even. Yeah, if Argentina lose that, it'll be one of the biggest upsets in the Copa.
In the history. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Plain and simple.
Yes. So let's talk about Venezuela and Canada. So Canada, we watched them last week. I think, what was it, against Peru?
Yes.
We watched them play Peru.
Either Peru or Chile, one of the two.
They got a red card and Canada scored. David scored.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So and then Venezuela were also the beneficiaries of a red card.
Ecuador.
Yes. Yes. Ecuador survived that.
Yeah.
They survived that. But Venezuela were able to also get out of the group stage. Who do you favor? I mean, I have to honestly, with David and with Alfonso Davies, I guess I slightly favor. I know Tejan Buchanan, I think, is injured at the moment or is being evaluated.
Yeah, he wasn't playing. Something happened.
Yeah. So are we going to say? I mean, I favor slightly. What are the odds on this game?
I was just pulling it up right now.
I favor Canada just because I've watched both of them play.
I will say Canada probably are the favorite, just slightly, just because of the two players you named.
Alfonso Davies and our boy.
Because Venezuela, you got Rondon. I mean, who else? So, you know, just off name.
39-year-old Rondon.
Yes, Everton legend. So let's see. Venezuela are the favorite. Slightly. Plus 155, Canada are plus 195. I mean, this is a flip of a coin. I mean, the draw is plus 215. So, I mean, this is as even as it gets.
Yeah, flip of a coin, yeah.
Yes. Flip a coin and you got the winner of this match. So, yeah, man, you're saying Canada got the slight edge. I kind of give it to Canada, too. I'm with you on that. I do think Venezuela probably – I think the physicality and the strong – I don't think strongness is a word, but the strong – the power of Venezuela could possibly push Canada to the brink here, and Rondon could push them to a victory. I think it's a coin flip. If I had to pick, I would simply pick Venezuela just because they're calm the ball. But that's the only reason why. I have no other reason why. I mean, you're looking at Solomon Rondon. I think he's 34.
Yeah, 34. You can get him for $1 million.
Yeah, he's playing at Pachuca, but he's been playing lights out. He took them. They actually won the title with Pachuca, if I'm not mistaken. And he's not, I mean, he's not terrible for the national side. I mean, he's a big physical power.
He is.
They have been playing lights out with Rondon. So I give the slight nod to Venezuela, but I mean, this could be anybody, man.
106 caps for Venezuela, 41 goals. I'm just saying that.
He's been a Venezuelan good.
I know Rondon has experience. I like David up front for Canada. I like Alfonso Davies. I think he's one of those.
Oh, he plays up front too.
Canada. He plays on the wing for Canada. Yes, you're right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna look. It's a coin toss. Yeah, could give me a quarter right now, and I'll flip it. If it doesn't have two heads on it, then one of them's gonna land.
Somebody's gonna win.
I could honestly pick either, but I'm just gonna go with Canada just because I think that they just have a little bit more star power. Yeah,
a little bit more talent. No, I agree with you on that one.
It's Colombia and Panama. Colombia survived. Their streak is still intact. They have not lost a match since February of 2022. We're now almost a 2.5 years of undefeated matches for the Colombian national team. Brazil got them 1-0. Rafinha scored. And then they got the equalizer in the 45+2. And that's how it would stay, ladies and gentlemen. So Colombia wins the group. And they advance to play Panama, who I think are very lucky to be where they're at because they got some breaks to go their way. But I think this is where the little joyride ends. Colombia ends Panama's fairy tale easily disposing them. I would say 3-0 in this one to Colombia. What are your thoughts? This is the early game on Saturday.
Yeah, Colombia is one of the best teams in international ball right now. I mean, you throw them in the Euros, it's going to be hard to beat them. I don't care what anyone tells me. I think Colombia.
They beat Germany last year 2-0.
Yeah, dude. I mean, Colombia would be playing very well in the Euros, and there's only a few sides you can say that for out of the Copa America. I mean, Argentina, Colombia, Brazil slightly. They're a little bit down. Uruguay. I like Colombia here. Panama is only here because the United States don't know how to keep their temper down and keep their coolness.
Yeah.
That red card destroyed them, and it put Panama in.
What's even worse is that the United States actually scored a down a man.
Yes.
And then conceded 3 minutes later.
And then Panama won in the 83rd minute. Yeah. So it's just ridiculous, man. I take Colombia. I would take them minus a goal and a half. They should win this very easily. Not even much needs to be said.
Okay, so this is our main event, 9 p.m. prime time on Saturday, July 6th. This is it, man. This
what
is the
time
one.
Is it at?
9 p.m.
Oh my god.
9 p.m. Yeah.
Why do they do that?
Prime time, man.
Yeah.
So this is it. This is the biggest match in the quarterfinals. The first time, really, honestly, Nick. The first time. I'm going to go ahead and say this. Besides the Colombia-Brazil match, and maybe you could argue Uruguay and USA. I mean, depending on how highly you rate the United States, you could make that argument. This is the first big name matchup that we've seen because of how the groups were distributed. Uruguay and Brazil. Uruguay and Brazil are both two teams that, based on talent alone, could win this tournament. Any given day, they could beat anybody else. And they obviously have Rafinha, they have Vinny Jr., they have Darwin Nunez, they have Luis Suarez. It goes on and on and on. As you said, Bielsa is the manager for Uruguay, plays a very attractive style of football, has Nunez scoring goals. He was the manager when Leeds United came up. So they're firing on all cylinders right now. Based on momentum, they got 9 points out of 9. Uruguay swept the group. You'd have to say you kind of favor Uruguay. What are the odds on this one?
Oh God, yeah, I wasn't even looking. Yeah, good question. So Uruguay. Oh gosh, Brazil are favorite. Brazil are favored. Same as Canada and Venezuela. Brazil are plus 155. Uruguay are plus 185.
So slight favorites.
Yeah, so slight. I mean, they basically made this a pick 'em. I mean, you'll win a little bit more money if you pick Uruguay. They don't have to advance yet, but the draw no bet is a slight favorite to Brazil, meaning that if the game ties, you get your money back. The draw is plus 230, so that's a little bit more than the Canada-Venezuela. But, this is a close one, even book-wise. I mean, they don't know what to take. My gambling side of me would say to take Uruguay plus 0.5, but that's at minus 220, and that you're not even going to win half your money back. So ain't no value there. I mean, until they get to advance, I mean, it's just going to be a hell of a close game, man. I mean, which Brazil's going to show up? That's the question you ask yourself. Will you get Costa Rica, Brazil?
Yeah.
Where and this is funny, they have a win and a draw since that game. And they got two bad calls out of that game. So how much do you blame on the referees?
That's true. It's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, they destroyed the next team 4-1. And then they just drew with Colombia, who have not lost a match in 3 years almost. So you got to say, I mean, it's a pretty evenly matched game. I wouldn't take either or.
But for this, you have to pick one because we're doing our semifinal predictions.
Yeah. If I have to pick one, I'd probably just have to go with Uruguay just because of Bielsa and Nunez. I take Uruguay 1-0, just like they beat Brazil for the first time in 20 years or 12 years in World Cup qualifying. I'll take them 1-0, and I won't bat an eye.
Okay.
I'll move forward.
So we have to predict the semifinals since the semifinals will take place before we talk again. So
when are the semifinals? Like Tuesday?
Tuesday and Wednesday next week. So it's Wednesday night.
Yeah, so we'll record. Yeah.
Yeah. So the final is Sunday, July 14th. So we'll cover the final in great detail. But we have this is so funny, man. Like, okay, the one semifinal then. So I also picked Uruguay to win, by the way. I'm in agreement with you there. Yes. Argentina versus the mighty Canada in I mean, can we just go ahead and
put
Argentina in the in the final? I mean, can we just go ahead and give them that?
Argentina should have beat Canada like 4-2. Canada had a couple chances, but this is with all the marbles on, and Messi had a rest the last match, so he'll be fully ready to go.
This is going
to
be bad comedy.
Yeah, it should be pretty bad. I mean, you're talking maybe 3-4 nil. If they can finish their chances, I would definitely take your Argentina
easily. Okay, Uruguay and Colombia. This is nasty. This is hard. Another back-to-back tough matches for Uruguay. Yeah. The fact that Colombia gets Panama might be an advantage because they don't have to basically run through their resources.
Yeah.
So, God, this is hard. Yeah. That's a hard one, man. I'm gonna say just because of the scoring power, I think honestly, Darwin Nunez is the. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Darwin Nunez is the difference maker in this game, and I think Uruguay advanced to the final against Argentina. I think they end Colombia's streak at 2.5 years.
Undefeated. Well, I'll say this: I think it'll draw and it'll go to extra time, and Colombia will get to keep their streak. Because we're not going to count the extra time or penalty kicks, and they'll technically get to keep their draw streak, and then that'll continue, and then Uruguay will win in penalties or extra time. I think it could. I'd hate to see it go 0-0, but it'll probably be like a 1-1, like we saw with Brazil.
Yeah,
Colombia should have actually beat Brazil last night. They had a goal called back that I feel was really close. So Colombia could win this match, man. It's definitely a toss-up. I think this will be the game of the Copa America. I don't think the Brazil-Uruguay match will be. I think Colombia and Uruguay in the semifinal will be the match of the tournament, and we will see a great match, man. I mean, hell, you could even get a couple goals from each. So
yep.
I'll take Uruguay and Argentina in the final, man.
So, you and I are both right down the same path on this one. Yeah, we definitely, I mean, but look, I mean, we're not going to just disagree for the sake of disagreeing. I mean, if it makes sense, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so now it is time we have to do the exact same thing for the European Championship. We have to do the semis and we have to do the quarters because they will play those games before we talk again. And then the final also will be Sunday. So both finals are on Sunday, July 14th, right? That's Bastille Day in France.
What time is the Euro final?
Like
2:30 or something?
The Euro final is 3 p.m. Eastern time.
And then the Copa final would be, what, 6 or 8?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yes.
It's probably 6 or 8.
Okay. So let's start off. The first match is this Saturday at 12 p.m. noon. Right? It's England and Switzerland. Yeah. So England's slight favorites. Slight favorites.
-170. Yeah.
Do you like what? Okay. This is how I see this going. I think the game ends 1-1, and I think England wins in penalties.
Oh, England winning in penalties.
Yes, I think England wins in penalties. I think it's going to end 1-1. I think Kane gets one. I think that Shaqiri gets one, and I think that it ends 1-1, and I think that England wins 4-3 in penalties.
So I mean England will probably win the whole thing, but I'll take Swiss, man. We'll get 2-0. England can't score. They were saved by a Jude goal. The header from the center back into the middle of the pitch just happened to land in front of Jude's face, or his back, actually, and he turned and kicked it. And they drew and magically got a header in the 93rd. So, yeah, man, Swiss play a tight game, and I think they should be able to overpower England. England shouldn't be here right now. The whole world knows that.
We know that, yeah. Okay, so we differ on this. So you have Switzerland advancing, I have England advancing.
Screw it.
Okay.
I don't care. I'm sticking.
The second game is going to be that same day at 3 p.m., so doubleheader on Saturday. That will be the Netherlands versus Turkey. And right now, the Netherlands had one of the most impressive performances in the round of 16. They beat Romania 3-0. You know, Romania is not trash, but they're also not an elite side by any means. But I feel like this. Netherlands did what Netherlands should have done. They won convincingly, okay?
Yeah, it was 1-0 till like the 70th. They scored the second, and then they got a third garbage goal in the end to give all the 2.5 players a win to try to help turn Vegas's lights out. So, yeah, I mean, Netherlands beat Romania. Romania were a better side than everyone thought. They won their group. They did great, and Netherlands are going to always beat Romania. I don't care. That's not a shocker at all. Netherlands just didn't look as good in group stage. They couldn't beat France without an Mbappe. And I think Netherlands, they won't win the tournament. They could possibly beat the Swiss or England, though. I think they have a chance to come out of the side of the bracket. They got fortunate enough to be left out of the Spain, Germany, France bracket. So they actually got lucky there. I don't see Netherlands really. I don't know if anyone can beat the Netherlands on that side. They have a chance to maybe win something here. So we'll see, man. Turkey don't stand a chance against the Netherlands. I think their magic runs out. I mean, for Turkey to beat the Netherlands would be pretty cool, but I wouldn't put any money on it. Netherlands should be the favorite there, and they should definitely win that match. If Netherlands lose that, then it'll just be funny, you know.
Turkey had one of the tough. I kind of surprised Austria lost to them. Honestly, did think that Austria was going to advance, and you were going to see an Austria Netherlands match, and not to be. So Turkey, impressive, man, against Austria. They really did you know, outperform expectations, and I think they have been doing that this entire tournament. So they're not a world beater, but they're certainly not someone you can overlook. I think the Netherlands, I like Netherlands 2-1 in this. I think the same score that Austria lost to Turkey by, I think Netherlands gets that same score line on Turkey. I think they do get one back. I think that, you know, maybe Cody Gakpo, perhaps, you know, one of the, you know, Holland has a number, Netherlands has a number of different players that can hurt you from any number of angles. So it's, they'll get two. I think Turkey gets one, and it'll be, for me, in the one semifinal, it'll be the Netherlands versus England in the semifinal. How do you see this one playing out then? Are you going with Netherlands or Turkey?
Yeah, Netherlands. I don't see Turkey being able to beat them. I mean, Netherlands,
So you have Switzerland and Netherlands in your semifinal.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I think the Swiss have a chance.
Okay, now this is the nasty side of the bracket.
Yeah.
This is actually, I was wrong. This match starts Friday at 12 p.m. So this is the first one.
Yeah, and Friday. Yeah.
Friday's when it kicks off.
Yes.
And then they have a doubleheader Friday. This is the host. This is the match of the quarterfinals, and hell, maybe it's the match of the tournament. This could have easily been the final.
Yeah.
And these are the two teams that, based on the power rankings, most people have said these are the two top teams in the tournament. It's really an injustice they're playing this early. I really hate this, but you know, so c'est la vie, as they say. This is how it works out. Spain and Germany, Nick. Germany. This match is being played. Let's see in the MHP Arena in Stuttgart. Is where this is being played. How do you see this one playing out? So it looks, this is exactly even. Based on Google, Germany's 35% to win, Spain 35% to win, extra time is 30%. So it's literally right down the middle.
Yeah, I think Spain, man. Nobody's playing better than Spain right now. Yamal, two assists. Everybody's playing lights out. Ruiz, if they need a goal, they can get it. Williams on the wing has been absolutely incredible. I would have to give the lean just to Spain, just because Germany still play Havertz up front. And the misses I saw from them in the last match in the first round were disgusting. And you can't do that against Spain. I mean, Spain are going to keep possession from you. This isn't 2010. This isn't 2012. This is a whole new side. And I just think they're going to be able to beat Germany. I mean, it's hard for me to go against Germany because I like Germany. I think they're a decent side. I think they're really good. It's sad that they had to come up against Spain, man, because Spain have been one of the teams of the tournament. They've been playing very well. So, yeah, I'll give it to Spain, but it's not going to be pretty. I think it'll be something silly like 1-0. Spain might get an early goal from Morata in like the 18th minute or 23rd minute. And then Germany will just try to attack and they're not going to be able to complete it because you got numbskull up front and Havertz who can't finish. I mean, I just can't back it, man. If I had to put money on it, I would pick Spain. I tell you what, I wouldn't mind if Germany won. I could then say ha ha and Germany are now into the semis. Or if Spain win, I can say cool. I picked them in to be in my last four or last five. So you've
been with them since the beginning.
So I don't. Either way it goes, I'll be happy. I would if I had someone gave me $1,000 and said I want you to win, I would just put it on Spain and just roll with it. So we got us a good match, man. This is what we asked for. I mean, this is why we play the
game. Just too early. It's just happening.
This could be a lot of people. I follow the Give and Go on YouTube and they cover stuff daily. And they were like, hey, man, this is the freaking final. This could be your Euros 2024 final right here. England's been crap. Everybody's been crap. Germany been playing well. Spain have been playing well. This could be the final. France are unheard of, unthought of. This could be the final. Winner takes all. It's funny. Last night I was watching their predictions, and they said whoever wins this match will win the 2024 Euros. And I like these guys, so let's see what happens. I actually think whoever wins this match will play in the final, and we'll see, man. I think it'll end up being Spain.
Okay, Spain. I'm also with you on this. I think I think it'll go 0-0 for a long time. I think the Spanish will gas the Germans out. And they'll be on fumes, and I think that they'll concede. It reminds me of like the 2006 World Cup semifinal against Italy, where the Italians just tired Germany out.
Yeah.
And I think Spain win 2-0. I think they get two in quick succession, and the scoreline will look uglier than it was. It'll be much more even match, but it'll be 2-0. I think Spain advanced to the semifinal. Last one. So France has underachieved a little bit. They've won most of their games, but they have not looked good doing it. They really very close to England in terms of like their form and how they've gotten here. It has not been pretty. Now, Portugal looked like a monster the first two games. They were humbled by Georgia. I mean, Georgia beat the snot out of them. They fought. Those Georgians fought only to get Spain in the round of 16 and get blown out. Worst result in the round of 16, 4-1. But Portugal then followed that up with really a match they could have easily lost against Slovenia. And they didn't. They went to extra time. Nobody scored. And they win 3-0 on penalties because Slovenia just sucks at penalties. So you have two teams that have not looked that great as of late, Nick, and one of them is going to have to go home. And it's going to be Portugal and France, a rematch of the 2016 final in Paris, which Portugal won to win their European championship 8 years ago. So who you got here? This is going to be, I think, a very, very tight matchup. I could see this going 0-0, honestly.
Yeah, I just Portugal don't play Jota, their best offensive player. I think it's crazy. I just got to go France just because I think they'll end up being the better side. I mean, really, Portugal, I mean, they are focusing too much on Ronaldo. Every look is to him. Every free kick is to
always,
Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Everything is going to him, and it's time that you have to move on from that. And this will cost them, man. I really think France will advance. I don't see them being stopped by Portugal unless the manager makes some changes, which could happen, then maybe so. But I see Griezmann, Mbappe, Colomani, all these guys banding together and really pulling this out. Koundé, they're right back, has been great, man. What a player. The Sevilla player, I don't see how they're keeping him. Maybe he has been sold or something. I don't know, but there's no way he'll be playing for Sevilla too much longer. I see France, man. I'll say France won 1-0 last match. It was against Belgium, who really aren't that good. I didn't think of them highly. I think we'll get some excitement, though, man. Some changes are going to happen. I'm going to say 2-1 to France. We'll get an Mbappe goal and a Griezmann goal, and Ronaldo will get his Euro goal to break the record for scoring in 5 Euros. And then he'll be sent home.
Okay. I'm actually going with the upset here. I'm going to go with the upset. I think Portugal do this. So they did this in 2016. They advance by way of 1-0, 0-0, penalty shootouts, whatever. They're scrappy. And you're right. They do rely on CR7 far too much in terms of, you know, feeding him ball distribution, scoring opportunities, creating chances. I mean, it's like he's the only thing that's ever existed on earth. And they, but with that being said, I think that I haven't seen France and their attack really strike fear in me either. So I think this is going to be a very, very hard fought, contested 0-0. And I think by hook or by crook, Portugal outlasts France and they win. Again, I think they're going to win back-to-back shootouts to advance to the semifinal against their nemesis, Spain, from the Iberian Peninsula. You're going to have an all-Iberian Peninsula semifinal with Spain versus Portugal. So that's I do favor Portugal to pull the upset and knock out France day after tomorrow at 3 p.m. when that kicks off. So you and I, right now, I need you to predict. So your semifinal, on the one hand, is Switzerland and the Netherlands. So I need you to pick a winner there, and that's the team that advances to the final from that side of the bracket.
Yeah, I'll take the Swiss in a shocking upset, and I think on the other side.
Wow! So you have Switzerland in the final.
Yeah, let's take Swiss to the final on tight football, defensive football.
I don't think either you and I didn't even consider them in our top four. When we predicted this,
yeah. I had Austria going to the final in my real actual sit down and thinking, I picked Austria and that's done and finished. So I'm switching it to the Swiss.
Yeah.
We'll say Swiss, and then it's going to be France versus Spain, and I'm going to take Spain. And you already know where I'm going with that. I won't even have to predict the final, but we'll see. We don't have to do the final. I think Spain will easily beat the Swiss or beat the Netherlands, no matter who it is.
Okay, so your final, we won't get into that, but we're just going to say your final is Spain and Switzerland. We won't say anything more than that. We'll talk about this at a later. So Nick's final for Sunday, July 14th, is the Swiss versus the Spanish in a showdown to hoist the European Championship. So for me, I have the Netherlands and England. And this is the end of the road, I think, for England. I think the Netherlands beat them pretty easily. And just from the fact that they are a more cohesive unit, they play together far better than the English do. No side-to-side passing, no backwards, no this, no that. Pickford doesn't have to chew out his back line. Or not Pickford. But you get my point. Pickford has to chew out his back line constantly because he's pissed off that they're sucking in front of him. So I think the Netherlands wins this one 2-0. I don't even think England get on the score sheet. I think it's going to be a 2-0 win. Very, very not cruising, but not a hard day at the office for the Netherlands. I think they advance to the final. And I have Spain beating Portugal in the semifinal. So you and I, the only thing when it comes down to it that we differ on, we are only one team apart in our final. We both think that Spain make the final based on how the brackets fall. And the only difference is that you picked the Swiss to beat the Netherlands, and I picked the Netherlands to beat England. So your final is Swiss-Spain. My final is the Netherlands versus Spain. That is a rematch of the 2010 World Cup final. So we have a lot to talk about then next week, but that's it. I mean, that is it. I think we're looking for some exciting matches this week especially in the terms of Spain, Germany, Portugal, France, and Uruguay, Brazil.
Yeah.
So that's going to be some very good football.
Yeah. It gets no better for international football. Yeah,
this is it.
This is what you ask for. I mean, I wish it could be like this in the summer all the time. And I wish they could eliminate the September, October national windows, but we will never probably see that, man.
No, so, probably not.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, we again want to send our thanks out to our guest and for our future contributor to the show, obviously. Steven, he came on today and rocked it out. A lot of Liverpool talk, a lot of England talk. And, you know, you and I, you know, we run the shop here in the basement. So yeah. We just business as usual for us, talking about the Euro, talking about the Copa. And we don't really have much transfer news to talk about because it's all rumors. You know, yeah. We talked about this whole Anthony Gordon thing. With Liverpool, it's, you know, we won't know anything until after these tournaments are over.
Yeah.
And everything else is, like you said, I think you put it best yesterday,
yeah.
phantom transfers. And it literally is. It's whatever whatever Twitter says. And
yeah.
We talked to a friend of ours, or I did yesterday, West Ham supporter, and he said he just turned his Twitter off because
yeah.
it's one day this guy's staying, the next day he's leaving.
Yeah.
And it's just all a bunch of bullshit until you actually see Fabrizio or somebody come out, or the club itself, their actual official Twitter come out and say, hey, welcome to the club. They're wearing a kit.
Yeah.
They got introduced with a presser and that's it. But until then, yeah. You know, we won't say anything because it's all just speculation. Yeah.
Nonsense.
So, hey, I got nothing else to say. You got anything else to say?
Good, man. Ready for the game.
All right. Well, we are turning the lights out in the basement. Thank you all for supporting. Thank you all for listening. Please remember to give us a 5-star review on on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and this is The Basement Out. We will see you all again next weekend. Take care. Shankly, they have taken you away. But you left a great 11. Before you went to heaven, now there's glory round the fields of Anfield Road. All round the fields of Anfield Road, where once we watched the King Kenny play. Songs to sing on the glory round the fields of Anfield Road. Outside the Paisley gates, I heard a cop I called in. Paisley. Grades 11 back in Rome in 77. Now the red men, we're still playing the same way. All round the fields of Anfield Road, where once we watched the King Kenny play. Songs to sing on the glory round the fields of Anfield Road. All round the fields of Anfield Road, where once we watched the King Kenny play. Dreams and songs to sing of the glory round the fields of Anfield Road.